For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Claws out down in Foxborough. Christian Arcan, Andy Hart, WEEI Afternoons. Nice to have you with us here today. That was Evan Lazar, who I am surprised to see this pivot from him at this point in the proceedings. I thought Evan Lazar was a guy who seemed vindicated, you know, justified.
Yep.
Someone who was, and listen, we don't have to get into the chain of command and who ordered the code red and who scrubbed his words off the site or anything like that, because that was a while ago, and it was, you know, the thing that happened and whatever. We know that it was someone in the Patriots organization ended up doing that, ended up scrubbing it. I don't think it was him, even though he went over in the other station and said, oh, yeah, really, it was me exaggerating. Like, no, I don't think you were exaggerating at all. No one thinks you were exaggerating anymore, Evan. In fact, I think more people are sort of coming around to this. It's sort of like the same thing that happened with Tommy Curran when he reported that the Patriots were, after that Germany game, thinking about firing Bill Belichick, and everyone's like, what? How can you say that? Blah, 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 blah. And then he came out and was like, they could change their mind. Oh, so now they can change their mind. Oh, Tommy, how could you say this? And he ended up being completely 100% right. It's sort of the same thing here with Lazar, although the phone call came from inside the house. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And that, what you just heard there, which, can we just play that one more time, Joe? Can you just go ahead and play this quote from Lazar? Because this was about the wide receivers. This was a conversation, not really about the beat reporters at all. It was about the wide receivers, and is there a problem in the locker room, and that sort of thing. A pretty well-worn topic, not one that, you know, anybody's shied away from here lately. And this is the angle that he takes with it, which I was very surprised by. Play it one more time.
When you go into the locker room and you have a goal in mind of, I'm going to talk to KJ Osborne or I'm going to talk to Kayshon Booty, and then you're asking certain pointed questions and the guys are answering the questions and then we're running with it, like, it doesn't do anybody a service, right? Like, it's not
that's the job.
It's just
all right,
not,
stop it right there, because Perillo in the background's like, you ask them questions and then they answer the questions. Yes, that's the job. That's what you're supposed to do. What
Correct.
Are you talking about, Evan? Like, what is this critique even supposed to mean? And I don't think he articulated it very well, but I think what he's accusing the people at Mass Live and whoever talked to Osborne and everybody else of doing is manipulating quotes maybe a little bit, taking things out of context, and repurposing answers to fit a narrative, which, let me just say, if I thought that was going on, and if you thought that was going on, Andy, you'd have said that. You'd have been like, hey,
Correct.
That's not what he meant. You can't cherry pick a part of a quote like that and make it seem like this guy wants to be traded or this guy doesn't think he should be even have to ask to get the ball on any given Sunday because he's such a great wide receiver. Like, those are things that we would have been sensitive to, that anybody would have been sensitive to, if we thought that's what was happening. That's not happening at all. These wide receivers can't wait to sing to the reporters about how disrespected they are and about how they're not getting the ball enough and about how it's an alley-oop if they want to get traded. Like, come on. We all read the same stuff here. Even if you did cherry-pick it, those words are words that you should be much more careful of saying. And by the way, they didn't. They didn't cherry-pick anything. Everything that was reported, everything that came out, because you notice you didn't actually get to any specifics there. And I think it's just interesting how a guy who earlier on in the season got lit up on our show by Jacoby Brissett saying, hey, you know, that's a guy who's a bad reporting of a guy who doesn't know what the hell he's talking about. Harsh words from Jacoby Brissett about Evan Lazar, who reported on something that, by the way, actually was happening. And now he's going at the other beat reporters. And then that prompted Perillo and his whole rant about, you know, guys like Andy here with the Tom Brady avatars and everything else. But interesting that that's Lazar's takeaway from all of this, is that, hey, these guys are in there manipulating things and reporting stuff these wide receivers didn't actually say. Where did that come from?
Yeah, I don't understand what Evan's doing here, unless he's trying to do a make good for his past issue
curry favor in the locker room. I mean, it could be
something.
Yeah.
They're screwing you, they're They're asking you questions, and then when you answer it, they're actually writing what you say. They shouldn't do that. That's unfair to you as an adult, human being, professional. This is one of the more ridiculous arguments I've ever heard. And I think Paul's response was the proper response.
I agree.
To laugh and say,
what are you talking about?
That's the job.
That's exactly what they're supposed to do.
Yeah. Now, if there's no question that so listening the other day, we talked about Jaylen Brown and Stephen A. Smith, and Jaylen Brown said journalistic integrity probably 400 times in that podcast. I believe in journalistic integrity. I hate if people really movie poster something and take like three words and put those in quotes and then kind of really take it in a different direction than it was if you put a much longer quote in there. I don't think that was done. First of all, I have a lot of respect for Chris Mason and Mike Giardi. Those were the two guys that kind of wrote the KJ Osborne thing more pointedly than anybody else did. I actually think the media, if anything, at times has bent over backwards to keep the players out of trouble. I think they have tried not to make a mountain out of a molehill.
Journalistic integrity goes two ways.
Absolutely. And I very much have faith in the journalistic integrity of Chris Mason and Mike Giardi. We can ask Mike Giardi in a little while about that. But I don't really... Lazar, we know who you are. And that's not meant as a personal shot. I lived that life. You work for the Patriots. So I don't necessarily expect you to be doing certain things to try to magnify the immaturity or the idiocy or the culture problems of your team. In fact, that's how you got in trouble, because you magnified what was an accurate interpretation of the culture problem in the locker room.
So he's overcompensating now, is what you're saying.
I feel like he is a little bit and going in that direction. And I would just keep a lower profile and probably stay out of it altogether. I mean, don't piss off the media. Don't piss off the team. Just try to go quiet for a few weeks. Because I got to think, you know, he's in that locker room. These are his coworkers. He's a beat writer.
Right.
So he has to answer to these guys, or at least look them in the face, or, I don't know, make a mean face from across the locker room or whatever the hell it's going to be, mean girl style. But the players, that is the job. When there is a question... And the players can answer it professionally. For example, I thought Kendrick Bourne, who kind of ignited a part of the fire in London with the whole comments about not staying out late and eating proper.
Right.
And he, you know, realized, because everybody thought he meant Pop Douglas. I thought when he spoke on Wednesday, I thought he had a much more professional answer and tried to put out the little fire that he had started. Like, that's the job. That's part of the job as a player. And if you can't do that, if you can't not step in it, you're going to have problems. Now, you might just want to disappear and try to see the media as little as possible. These guys don't seem to be avoiding the media.
No.
They seem like they want to say things. So much so that they don't just keep it to the media. They go to the social media and do it in their own time, in their own outlets at times. So I don't think anybody is blowing up what any of these players are saying. In fact, I think people have taken steps to try to help them out in some of their missteps.
Diffuse what they're saying and try and minimize it. I agree.
Correct.
I think that's more likely what's happening here.
Which is not the job.
No, it's definitely not the job. And by the way, these guys are going to get it out there one way or another, whether they're talking to you, Evan Lazar, or Chris Mason, or Mike Giardi, or Karen Garrigan, or anybody, or not. I mean, they're going to say what they have to say. They've all proven that so far. There's no filter with a lot of these guys.
Everybody just do your job.
Right? I mean, that's sort of what we're looking at right now. Like, you don't see a whole lot of caginess, right? Wariness. Ooh, I better not say this. I don't want to say the wrong thing. I don't want to come off like a diva. I don't want to come off like a guy who's got a really lack of self-awareness here about who I am and what I am on this team. You're not seeing any of that. You're seeing guys who first and foremost are thinking, how can I get my story out there? How can I get the ball more? And how can I get everybody on my side with this? That's what you're seeing. And that's why they're using the media in this way or social media in this way. But to be like, no, that's all being taken out of context. No, it isn't. No, it is. Like, there's really no way that I think you can say that and feel good about it, knowing how eager these guys are to talk. I mean, that's really what it is. If they weren't so eager to talk, and you were getting stuff from unnamed sources, unverified sources, anonymous sources, right? That's what Jaylen Brown was all upset about. Oh, who's this anonymous source you're talking about? State your source. None of these guys have to state their source. Their source is standing there in front of their locker telling them all this stuff. Like, this is not one of those cases.
And I haven't heard a single player or member of the organization make a claim other than Evan Lazar, but I mean like Stacey James, Coach Stacey, anybody like that. I haven't heard anyone claim we were misquoted. He never said that. That was whatever. The only thing I've heard is Kendrick Bourne say, yeah, I know everybody kind of ran with that in a certain direction. That's not what I meant. He clarified his own comments like his head coach has had to do a few times. But don't you think if this was flat out taken way out of context or misappropriated in any way or flat out not said, maybe made up or right. exaggerated, I think they would push back against it.
Definitely.
Stacey James would push back or somebody else, the player themselves. So,
that's Coach Stacey to you, by the way.
Yes, that is Coach Stacey. I try to be respectful.
Right.
So I think this is more than they should probably be addressing. From
Coach Stacey over here.
In an aggressive manner. But I enjoy that show. That's a good show, and you know why? Because they talk about stuff like this. More people should talk about stuff like this. I think sometimes there's a third rail. From what I understand, some of the beat writers were none too happy with Paul Perillo yesterday. I heard through sort of the grapevine that there was sort of a group text going on that they were not happy.
I'll tell you what, I'd be less happy with Lazar than Perillo. I mean, Perillo's thing was sort of like, you know, you guys need to be tougher. Lazar's is like, you guys are making stuff up.
Yep,
I think one of those is a much bigger insult, I think, or a much bigger accusation. It's one thing to say, hey, you guys need to ask tougher questions. Fine. All right, Paul, like you've been doing this a long time. I'm sure you think that. It's another thing for this guy to be saying, a guy who's younger, he's one of the younger guys, saying, hey, I don't think that you're given the proper context to these quotes. I think you're misreporting things.
Yeah,
that's a bigger accusation than you guys are going easy on the new head coach, I think.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, one is saying you're a little soft. One is saying you're just actually nefarious or something. You're trying to create something. You're shady. And that's not good. I also don't really know what Evan's point was. Like, so, you know, you go in the locker room with a plan to talk to a certain player and ask him certain questions and then write about it. Like,
yeah.
What do you do, Evan?
That's what you do, yeah. Like, I've never had that job before. Even I know that's the basic steps of how to do it, right?
Kind of
like,
what you do. I think when you're doing your job improperly, you don't go in with a plan. You don't know what player you want to talk to. You don't have questions to ask. You just kind of mill about, and whoever talks, you go over and stick your recorder in and write some stupid story off it. You're supposed to have a plan.
Yeah, 100%.
And this team's easy to plan for because they give you lots to work with.
They do. I mean, really, it's not like there's a big wall of silence here. These guys are ready to give quotes. 617-779-7937 is the phone number. Keep it right here. Mike Giardi is going to join us in just a few minutes as we continue with this weird civil war going on in the Patriots beat. But first, here's Joe Braverman to tell you what you...
For the past three seasons have gone south, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Trending. That was Jacoby Brissett with us months ago now. When was the mutiny thing? Was that after the Jets, the first Jets game?
49ers, I thought.
The Niners game, that could be.
Didn't he say
this
was
at the beginning of the month that he said it, in October.
Yeah, okay. I think he said I was in the locker room in San Francisco, and the defense was fighting the defense, and the offense hates the offense, and it's a mutiny they're teetering on.
Yeah.
Now he says the media is too tough on people.
So, yes, the San Francisco game was on the 29th. So if that was right at the beginning of October, then that would line up, I guess, with that.
Yeah.
The Miami game was then on the 6th, so it was in between those two games. I think that's right. That sounds right to me. The Monday after that was right around the beginning of that. So, yeah, okay. There it is. And that was harsh. I mean, that was the harsh thing for Jacoby Brissett to say about a fellow Patriots employee, nonetheless. But certainly about a guy who I think reported something accurate. I think that that was pretty on point. And I don't really think that anything that's happened since then has softened my belief that, yeah, this was a real problem going on in that locker room. There was some real beef going on there. And maybe it wasn't, the offense being mad at the defense or anything, because what the hell could they even be mad about? No one's playing well, and they were all mad at each other. Maybe mutiny is the wrong word in the sense that if you're mad at each other, then you're not necessarily trying to overthrow the coach. Mutiny implies making someone walk the plank, like the captain has to walk the plank in a mutiny. And maybe that's not exactly what it was, but there was a lot going on there. It was a tense situation, and it's probably gotten worse since then, to the point now where these wide receivers, these mediocre to bad wide receivers, as you point out, Andy, feel very comfortable just coming out and saying whatever they want all the time to whoever's there ready to listen and write it down. I mean, it's really something in this locker room right now.
Yeah, and as dumb as I think what Evan Lazar said this week is, based on challenging other reporters and the way they're handling things, I think he was dead on. I actually questioned the word mutiny at the time. I think he was accurate, and I think he was seeing it. Because to me, what KJ Osborne has done this over the last week is a mutiny type thing. If you're airing the dirty laundry, if you think the coaching staff is mishandling players, isn't that a mutiny? Isn't that a whistleblower
Definitely,
kind of thing?
Yeah, sure.
You're being a whistleblower. The coaches are so bad, they told me Wednesday I wasn't playing. Then Saturday night, they told me I had to play, and it wasn't fair, and it's not right, and they're bad coaches. That's a mutiny. I think that is trying to make your head coach look bad.
He's demanding a trade in the media, and he knows he has no trade value. Like, that's...
But
that
I don't think
right
that's
there,
mutiny. No, I think guys demand trades all the time, and it doesn't. The first thing, the social media thing, to me, he was intentionally undercutting his coaching staff. That is, he wanted to make the coaching staff look bad. That's a mutiny. I also think Kayshon Booty is a step towards mutiny. When you say, it's really ridiculous, the only time I get the ball is when I ask for it, and I've caught both balls they threw to me, so maybe they should know what the hell they're doing, right? He's questioning, he's undercutting the authority and the coaching and the skill and the ability of Alex Van Pelt and the coaches. Those two actions by Osborne and Booty, to me, are how you would start a mutiny, how you would the players revolting against the authority. So I think Evan Lazar, was that a month ago now? Is that what you're saying? What are we, 20?
Yeah, just about. Between 3 and 4 weeks ago, yes.
Yeah, I think he was observing properly. I think he was prescient, to use a big fancy word.
Yes, and mutinous behavior is what we had there, I think.
Is that a real word?
It is a word. Sure. I just looked it up right now. A adjective, refusing to obey the orders of a person in authority, someone who is mutinous, generally referring to soldiers or sailors.
Or football players that play wide receiver for the New England Patriots.
Yes, wide receivers on the New England Patriots, of course. The most mutinous of all. And speaking of which, joining us right now here on the hotline is your friend and mine. You can catch his stuff over at Boston Sports Journal, and you can have his work critiqued by Evan Lazar over at Patriots Unfiltered. I'm talking, of course, about Mike Giardi, who joins the show right now. Mike, how you doing?
What a jackass.
Which one of us are you referring to?
Yeah, I think it was the guy that you referenced as critiquing work lately. He should figure out how to be a journalist first and foremost, and then get back to me.
Okay, well, he did get, I don't know if you heard it in the beginning here, he did get sort of slapped down by Jacoby Brissett a little early on. It seems like maybe he's trying to repair his reputation in that locker room. Is that something you can relate to?
I mean, I would just say, you know, he said the mutiny thing, and it feels like we're going in a 180-degree direction the other way. So, you know, That's for him to live with. He can choose to do with it what he wants.
So, Mike, I was just thinking, I have no idea what the first question I want to ask you is, because there is so much going on with this football team. There's so many layers to dysfunction. But let's start at sort of the most recent thing, and that was the end of Gerard Mayo's press conference today, when he did the whole Belichickian Jets breakdown, which if you're going to really mimic Bill, is supposed to be done on Wednesday, not on Friday, as you get close to the game. And then he said, Coach Stacy told me to talk about the Jets. What did you think of that? How did you interpret that? Why is he telling us? I know he likes to make those little jokes, but how did you interpret the Coach Stacy comment after his Jets-focused press conference?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think things have gone so far. Again, speaking of going in the wrong direction, have gone so far in the wrong direction, and he's talked about wanting to be transparent and giving us as much as he can without, you know, revealing, you know, details that might compromise their position in a game or something like that. And when you're 1-6 and your wide receiver room is squawking left and right, and you're not getting simple things done, you know, like how many times are they misaligned or guys just didn't fill a gap in the last 5 weeks now? Like, you keep talking about fixing the same things and they don't get fixed. And maybe this is his way of just being like, you know what, I'm just going to rewind all this stuff, as he continues to do all season long, you know, so like, I cast it out there and I'm going to bring it back in, and let's just kind of go with this more basic monotone just whatever approach that, that obviously Bill had working for him for 20 years.
Is it desperation?
I think the message on in the team meeting on Thursday was not only about, you know, do more. I mean, certainly a lot of that was the vibe out of that, but also let's stop bringing the noise to the public and to the media. You know, if you got issues, let's do our best to keep them in house, which again is reverse of what he was saying back in the spring, summer, and early fall with Judon and et cetera. Like, oh no, be a man. Nope. He gave them an opportunity to do that. And there's too many guys that can't handle it. So this is probably an overcorrection, but something that has to be done.
Mike, in the last 2 years of the Belichick era, there was plenty of games I remember afterwards. Mac Jones, Jacoby Myers, Kendrick Bourne, guys openly questioning the play calling, sort of doing the same sort of stuff. Maybe not to the extent that you're hearing it right now, but not exactly this tight-knit, you know, no leaks on this ship type of stuff. And I feel like there's a lot of revisionist history going on. What's the difference between sort of those years and the way it's all unfolding right now?
Well, the difference between those years and even as it started to unravel for Bill is that you could look at the resume and say, well, no, he always gets a sixth and, you know, he'll have an answer for this or he'll quell this because that's what he's done. Or, you know, he'll say to this guy, you know what, I don't like you speaking out. You know, Bears tapped him on the shoulder, he came into my office, and now you're not going to play as much. And generally, he put someone else in there who wasn't as good, and that guy would play just fine and be like, oh, he did it again. You know, he hit the right buttons. And I think now when you're 1-6 and pretty much every button you've hit has been the wrong one, I mean, that's a massive difference. Gerard doesn't have the coaching resume to fall back on in the success and say, no, we did it this way and it worked and this is how we're going to continue to do it. He is trying to operate his way through this as a first-time head coach, and we're seeing the growing pains. I thought they were going to happen. I just didn't know they would happen to this extent.
Is Gerard Mayo on the hot seat?
I think he's fine for this year, Andy. I mean, if it devolves into complete chaos, and even though this has been a pretty loud week or two.
What does complete chaos look like if this is not complete chaos?
I mean, I think the complete chaos would be leaders of the team openly calling out the coach. And I don't think we're there yet. I think, you know, you've got the KJ Osborne, Kayshon Booty, the Jalen Polk. You guys haven't really done anything or very much in this league. And if you have some qualms of beefs about what's going on, whatever, fine. But
wait a minute. Sorry to interrupt though.
Yes.
So you say if the leaders of the team are calling out the coach, yesterday when he was asked who should be the mentor that wide receivers should follow, Alex Van Pelt said KJ Osborne. KJ Osborne is the one who posted about not being happy that he found out on Saturday night that he was going to play because he was told on Wednesday that he was inactive. I mean, isn't that borderline a leader of the team calling out the head coach and trying to embarrass the coach?
I think that you and I would define leaders in a different manner. I don't think.
No, I'm letting Alex Van Pelt decline it.
Alex said what he said. I can't break it down. If that's what he believes, that's what he believes. But obviously, if that's a leader, then the guy wouldn't have been sitting in weeks 5 and 6 and wouldn't have sat in week 7 if not for the illness that was going around the wide receiver room in London. So, you know, like, what are we talking about? That'd be like, I don't even know, like, I'm trying to think of like a random Patriot player who'd been in the room for a few years and you're like, oh, well, he's been here. Yeah, but he doesn't play. When he plays, he doesn't make an impact. So what kind of leader can you be?
I wonder if this whole thing is going to be detrimental towards the development of Drake May, which, Mike, this whole season was supposed to be about just that, basically, right? No one really cared that much about how many wins they had or if they were going to beat the Jets or anything like that. It was about Drake May developing him and seeing what you have there at quarterback. Is all of this chaos and turmoil and mutiny crap, it can't be good for him, can it?
Well, so far he's handling it. And I did ask Van Pelt on Thursday, sort of like, do you worry that he's going to be too hyper-focused on, you know, like, taking care of the guy? See how he complained, so let me get him the ball.
Right.
He even mentioned, like, throwing the ball last week to Kendrick Bourne. Like, Kendrick was working hard, and I felt like I had to get him the ball. That's one thing, but if you're going to start listening to Kayshon Booty believing that he's open on every single play and you should throw him the ball, and that's not where the read's supposed to go, or that's not what the matchup says, or, in fact, he's not open, then that would be a problem. But, you know, again, so it's a small sample size. It's just two games. But he hasn't done that, and it feels as though he just got a little like coolness to him. Like, all right, fine, man. Like, if you're not where you're supposed to be, I'm not going to throw you the ball. Which is, I think, why you're seeing in particular Hunter Henry the last couple weeks. Like, Hunter, he knows where Hunter's going to be, so Hunter's going to get fed.
In terms of the wide receiver room, it feels like if I were coaching and sort of just wanted to bring it back together, there would be an example made. Do you think that is a possibility where they could make an example of someone, either a trade, although I don't know if they have anybody that would really garner much in a trade, or could there be somebody who gets cut? Because it feels like even Jalen Polk, we were talking about last week, oh, would he be inactive and does he need to be shown a lesson? And he was out there until he got banged up or whatever. Do you think there could be a lesson made, taught, and who would the most likely candidate be in your mind?
I think, Rick, I kind of feel like that's not going to happen. I just feel like even when they have, as you mentioned, when they've done it, they haven't done it to some great extent, right? So, like, it was clear we knew Waquan McMillan wasn't going to play that much based on his previous performance, and so Christian Ellis gets out there 60% of the time. Christian Ellis isn't much better than Raekwon McMillan, if he's better at all. Like, you're in the same situation. Like, this week I would not play K.J. Osborne. But if Jalen Polk's not active and Javon Baker can't be trusted to be out there, then what are you doing? You calling up, I think the kid's name is Jake Westover from the practice squad. Like, I don't know. Ooh. I mean, maybe you do that, but it doesn't feel that that's the direction they're going in.
But don't they need to do something like that? Like, don't they need, like, you're not trying to win games.
Oh, Andy, I would have traded. Look, Chris Mason and I talked to KJ Osborne on Wednesday, I wrote on Tuesday in the Boston Sports Journal that I was done with him. I would trade him. And like, look, I don't know what they told him when he signed here. He's obviously not making a ton of money, but you're looking at two supposed to be professionals in the room, Kendrick Bourne and KJ Osborne, and the rest are a bunch of young, unproven guys who may never be able to prove themselves because they're just not good enough. But so he comes in here, and that's just not how you do it. And dissatisfied with your situation, nobody wants to be on a 1-6 football team. I get all that, but like, dude, we're leaning on you to be a pro, and you're just doing the same thing that the first and second year players are doing.
Is there any way?
Doesn't fly for me.
Is there any way that this gets better? Like, if they beat the Jets this weekend, for example, Mike, do you think some of this could start turning around at all?
Oh, I think they desperately need a win. I think we've been saying that. I think I said the Miami game. Like, just get a win. Like, it doesn't even matter how you get it. 10-9. If they won that game 16-15, whatever it may be, 3-2. They just need to feel some positivity because 6 straight weeks of losing, basically getting your face pounded in during that entire time, and like, the questions are more direct and the feelings are raw, and it just, we're seeing it. It's definitely like there's an unraveling that's happening. It hasn't unraveled all the way. And maybe if you steal a win here, or, Tennessee, it could be the everybody wear bags over their heads for that game type of situation in Tennessee 2 weeks from now, like, then whatever, just get one. You just need to feel some good vibes, and they haven't felt that for a long time.
Mike, right, based on the play, I just got to collect another one of these. Just, this is for you, Arcand. Okay. Based on the play over the last couple of weeks, who has the better quarterback heading into Sunday's game at Gillette Stadium?
Well, Drake's playing better than Aaron.
Yeah, let's go. Thank you, Mike. You answered it properly.
Yeah, well, and look, that's, again, with short sample size, no one's making predictions about the long-term viability of Drake. But in this period right now, absolutely. Aaron threw a dreadful interception when his team was on the verge of running Pittsburgh out of the building and took all the air out of the balloons. And then the second one, he hits the perfect throw, hits Garrett Wilson right in the chest. Somehow the ball pops up in the air like 20. I mean, it was the dumbest thing ever. But like, that's just sort of how it's going for them, too. And he hasn't been good enough. And he's blamed Mike Williams, and he blames this and that and the coach and whatever. And he's not, the last good game he played was actually a great game, and it happened against you on that Thursday night.
All right. If May has a bad game, you can blame Andy Hart for screaming all week that May is better than Aaron Rodgers. And also Patrick Mahomes, he said the other day, too. So if that happens, you can blame one Andy Hart for that, nobody else. Mike Giardi, thanks so much for the time today. We appreciate it.
Thanks, guys.
All right, that's Mike Giardi, Boston Sports Journal. You can check out his stuff there and online at Mike Giardi on Twitter. 617-779-7937. There's your phone number. Quick break. When we come back, the World Series begins tonight. Woo! Do you care? Do you care about the World Series? And we'll get to the Red Sox pillar power rankings. It's coming up next. You excited for the World Series tonight, Andy Hart? Ready? You ready for some baseball? You ready for some Dodgers-Yankees? You ready for the two big media markets? Slapping the old baseball around the yard there? You excited?
You worried me there. I didn't know where that sentence was going to go when you seemed
good,
to...
Good save, Arcan.
Thank you. You seemed unsure, too.
I was trying to remember what baseballs are made out of. What are they made out of? What's a baseball? What's the actual material?
There's a core in the leather.
It's leather? Horsehide? Yeah, I guess that's it.
On the outside. And then on the inside, it's a bunch of string wound.
Yeah, it's like twine, right? Or something round stupid like that? Yeah, whatever.
And then there's a little ball in the middle. Mm-hmm. You cut it open.
And there's no, I don't know, I guess there's no like funny slang for that. Anyway.
Yeah, it's just core, yarn, a cover, and 108 stitches.
And a bunch of stitches. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, and I'm not looking for slap hits. So, no, I wouldn't use the word slap. I'm watching Shohei Ohtani and Aaron Judge and Mookie Betts. I'm looking and Giancarlo Stanton to hit the ball far and hard. Now, I am excited. This is the stage. This is an answer to how many years did we hear it's such a shame that Shohei Ohtani and Mike Trout are on the Angels and never get to share the biggest stage
right.
and the passion and the postseason. Well, Ohtani has not only shared the stage, he is the centerpiece. He is the lead singer in this performance. And no, I am actually looking forward to it. What time's first pitch? Because that can decide how much I look forward to it.
I believe 8 o'clock. Yeah, 8:08 is a
okay, 8:08, good. Remember the old days when it was like 8:46 or something and you'd get those really... No, modern baseball, 8:08, I am absolutely... So when I get home from Friday Night Lights, Miller Lite and a little World Series baseball will be on tap.
Pretty exciting. Buster Olney tweeted this today. There are five former MVPs in the World Series rosters of these teams. You just mentioned most of them. Giancarlo Stanton, Aaron Judge, Mookie Betts, Freddie Freeman, and Shohei Ohtani. If all five play in the game, which is expected, they're all going to play in all the games, I think, that would be the most former MVPs playing in one World Series in the history of the major leagues. The previous high was four, done nine times, most recently 1971, Jeez. Orioles, Pirates, Boog Powell, Brooks Robinson, Frank Robinson, and Roberto Clemente. That's surprising, you know? Like, I saw that, I was like, that's interesting. But if you think about it, like, yeah, a lot of the... Mike Trout was the MVP how many years in a row? Did he ever play in a playoff game? Like, a lot of these guys, these MVPs, you know, they're on these small market teams. They don't ever get to the play. This is exactly what baseball needed. This type of series is exactly what baseball needed to showcase its stars. And that's been an issue for this sport for really since the steroid era ended, I think. I mean, they've had a crisis of how to promote and how to market these guys without, you know, going over the top about how big and ripped they are, which was all they did during the steroid era, and it was great, by the way. But that's, you know, that's it, and they don't really know what to do now, and this is it. You got two star-studded teams here. You got MVPs all up and down the rosters, high prices, high payrolls, what baseball should be. And it's going to be on display. And I think that this is two good fan bases, too. And the Dodgers didn't always used to be. And I think that that's really, really useful for a sport that's having trouble promoting itself. Here it is. It's been hand-delivered to you. Last year, it was the Rangers and the Diamondbacks. Who do you think they'd rather have? Yankees, Dodgers, or that thing last year that nobody watched? This is going to be appointment television, I think, especially if it's a seven-game series between these two teams. If it's close, tense games, oh, yeah. People are absolutely going to be into this.
And I know we have a certain perspective on this because we are a big market sports town.
Right.
But there's five of them. Four of them were acquired. One of them is homegrown. Aaron Judge, right? Aaron Judge is a Yankee, although he almost left. He was one, right? He was going to the Giants or whatever, and that was a done deal.
Yeah, but I don't know if that was
untweeted
a real thing. Right.
But the rest of them were acquired. Mm-hmm. So it's made quite clear. Acquisitions, usually Cha and Ching putting some money together and going to get a guy, sometimes in a trade because you're willing to accept a contract, whatever it may be. This is an example of money works still in Major League Baseball. I don't want to hear all the, oh, you spend, it never works out, you got to build from the front. Nope. There's MVPs on full display. They were acquired by the teams. They were not their original teams. The teams paid them boatloads of money, and they're in the World Series. It's simple science, right? The science is before us. Spend some money, be aggressive, go get marquee talent, and you might have a really good chance to go to and win a World Series because one of these two teams has bought themselves a World Series title.
Yep.
One of them has to win. It's guaranteed that one of them is going to win. So from our perspective, I'm not saying you should maybe feel that way if you're in Kansas City. You might actually hate that and say, oh, great, I got to go watch a World Series where both teams acquired all this MVP talent, right? That's not my kind of baseball. We're not in that world. But we're in Boston. I don't care what you think in Kansas City.
Yeah.
Screw off.
And you know what? A lot of this talent got acquired from you in Boston or Atlanta, another big market there, which is where Freddie Freeman came from. I mean, these are not – it wasn't all the plucking guys from the Florida Marlins or, you know, these dead-end small market teams like the Red Sox gave him Mookie Betts. The Braves gave him Freddie Freeman. Like, that's, you know.
The Angels. Shohei Ohtani was on the Angels. That's not a small market team.
It's not a small market team. They were kind of a second-tier team, I would say.
But they can
spend.
But
they did. Yeah, they can. And they didn't. So there you go. All right. Let's get to our. Oh, do you want to do this right now, the Pillar Power Rankings?
Sure.
All right.
I'm excited about this. And
right
you've
here.
Mastered this saying it. You struggled early on with the Pillar Power Rankings.
I did.
Maybe dropping the Patriots P. Maybe that was one too many P for you. One less P and you're good to go with the Pillar Power Rankings. But yeah. I enjoy this. I enjoy these
That's
Pillar Power
Rankings. What my doctor said, too. All right. Well, let's get to them. Pillar Power Rankings today for the Boston Red Sox. Now, how are we gonna structure this, Andy?
Okay. So the Pillar Power Rankings, from my perspective, and you can correct me if you feel otherwise, are we still have ownership.
Mm-hmm.
We still have manager. Don't call him Skip. He's not a coach. He's a manager. We still have executive level, with GM, Breslow. And then I broke, instead of in football, we had roster and quarterback.
Sure.
Here, I think we go with lineup and pitching.
As two separate ones?
Yes.
Okay.
So those are the pillars of what I think is building a World Series contending baseball team that maybe someday, hey, as early as next year, could be the Red Sox in the World Series. We could be talking about them and a 808 first pitch. So you want to go first or you want me to go first?
Sure. Are we starting from the bottom or the top?
Go from the bottom, so the least impressive or least confident aspect of the team, and we'll work our way up to the best part of the team.
Bottom for me is ownership. Down at the bottom, they are number six on this list. Number five, excuse me. They could be six if I could make them six, but there's only five options here. They're number five with a bullet. I feel like ownership completely neglects this team, has no real interest in their day-to-day wins and losses. I don't think they really care about anything except making sure it's a nice line item on their portfolio, and I think that the results have sort of reflected that. I have them down at the bottom by a lot.
I do, too. To me, that's a layup. Now, this is weird. It's a little bit like Kraft being questioned now. This is a team. We celebrated the 20-year anniversary of those 2004 Sox, and they've won multiple times since then. And yet, they're at the bottom of our Pillar Power Rankings. That's weird.
Yeah, I mean, it's true.
It's
this is where they are right now. And if we were asking me this question 10 years ago or even 5 years ago, I probably wouldn't have them this low. But this
and
is,
they
this
can
is
get
where
out of it
are.
Easy.
And they deserve to be there.
All they got
to
do is get one of those old-fashioned things called a checkbook, open it up, get a pen, write some Juan Soto $600 million, and you'll move up my Pillar Power Rankings. Very simple.
Very good. All right. So for number four, then, ownership is off the schneid there. I'm going to go with the pitching staff at number four, I think.
Oh,
I'm not a big
really?
Fan of this pitching staff. I do think you have some guys here that you like, but you don't have an ace. You don't have a closer. I don't really feel great about the bullpen, period. Sorry, Tanner Houck back there. He's not a terrible ace, but he's not someone that I look at and think, yeah, this guy's going to take you to the promised land. I feel like they've neglected the pitching staff, and it's not necessarily the pitching staff's fault. Like, I don't think Cutter Crawford stinks or that, these guys are all bad pitchers, but I just don't feel great about what a team with this type of resources has amassed here. I feel like they've mostly let it go, and Giolito being injured right away. I didn't feel good about Giolito coming here in the first place either. So, yeah, the pitching staff, I think, is their on-field, anyway, their biggest weakness. So I'd put them at number four.
So I find that surprising. I do not have pitching at number four. I have number four being Craig Breslow / the executives, because as much as I want to believe we're about to embark on an old-school Red Sox hot stove talk off-season, I have to see it. And even if they do, he needs to do it right. Because Craig Breslow supposedly was a buyer at the trade deadline, and he bought nothing but like day-old baked goods that got moldy as soon as I tried to use them. He did not do a good job buying there. So Craig Breslow needs to prove to me. I almost thought about putting him last because he doesn't have a track record to run on. Like, at least John Henry can say, well, I used to spend money, and I used to bring titles to Boston, and I used to do good business. So I got Craig Breslow at number four because he can move way up. He could move up. Within a month or two, I could have him much higher on this list. But for now, Craig Breslow, baseball operations, you're fourth.
Okay. I have third. I was going to go with executive there, but I'm going to go with the manager there. Because it's the opposite of what you just
said.
It's going to be the opposite of what you just said. And this is, I know, pushing Breslow up maybe higher than he deserves to be, but
yes,
he doesn't have the track record. Alex Cora does. Alex Cora's track record in the second half of the season these last couple of years has been dreadful. And that's not something I'm just going to look the other way on because he signed an extension and because we interview him every week and because I like the guy. I mean, this is a pattern now that you're seeing year in and year out. And it's not a pattern that I can ascribe to Craig Breslow in that same way. But they fired Dave Dombrowski and this whole same thing. It's hard to work in those settings. And I think Breslow did okay with the roster that he put out there to start the year. But eventually, you know, it comes down the same stupid problem that you keep on having, which is an ownership thing. But with the manager, this manager's been there. He's been a common theme between all of these collapses in the second half, and I feel like this is an appropriate place for him, so I have him third.
Wow, you're not going to like my list, but my third on the Pillar Power rankings is the lineup. I think it is too left-handed, too dominant to one side. I think it was poorly constructed in that way. I think there are questions about what it's going to look like moving forward when you try to fix that. I think there are questions, yet again, every time they get a nice power hitter to add to the complimentary bat, he's gone.
It's true.
And I feel like that's going to happen again with Tyler O'Neill. You're going to watch another guy that you kind of liked and you kind of grew attached to.
And who has a perfect swing for Fenway and has right. like big numbers for 1 year. Yeah, exactly.
And
Hunter Renfro
like
is the same
yeah,
thing.
Hunter
it's
Renfro.
All over again.
I feel like he's not going to be here, so I can't even get attached to him. The big bopper in the lineup, Devers, I know he was hurt and he got stuck on whatever it was, 28 home runs. He was going to have like a career year and then he didn't because he never hit another home run
right.
and the shoulder and the whole thing. But I've always kind of not loved him being the centerpiece of your lineup. I don't think you get full return on that $300 million investment in Rafi Devers, and I want to see where that goes. So I have questions about this lineup as it's currently constituted, but also questions about it, what it's going to look like when they reconfigure it and try to fix it and make it better and take out a Tyler O'Neill and get less left-handed and do all those things. And Tristan Casas, he might not be the second coming of Ted Williams like everybody told me he was going to be last spring. That's another aspect of this. In fact, he may even be traded away as you try to figure some things out. So I think the lineup has a lot of questions in my three spot.
Okay, fair enough. I just gave you the reasons why I have the executive up at number two. So that's who my two is, Craig Breslow. I'm not super impressed with him yet, but I have him a little bit higher than those guys just because he has a little bit more time here to prove that he's worth something and doesn't have a bad track record. So it's not a high bar to clear, but that gets you up to number two. Who's your number two?
So my number two is the pitching staff. I got to give them credit for all the guys that made the 30 starts last year. And the lineup and the pitching staff to me were kind of 2-3 in some order. I went with this order because I don't think there's a lot of baseball teams that can just roll out of bed and throw three or four guys out there 25-plus times, 30-plus times. They were able to do that. I'm hoping Brian Baio is going to turn a corner and become more so that we're debating, hey, who's better, Hauk or Baio? And then when you add a pitcher atop the rotation, I think you can say, wow, these guys look even better when you put them all down, one domino, one slot in the lineup. So I went with pitching number two. So you know what that leaves me with at number one?
Manager at number one for you, lineup at number one for me. I think the lineup's the only thing that's really got me at all excited about this next year.
They fell apart down the stretch.
I know, but I still think they have guys coming up in the minors. I like their young talent. I like Jaron Duran. I think that Kazas, if he stays, is going to develop and continue to be a good power hitter. They do need to get more right-handed. That's true. True, but I like their lineup. I think it's a good lineup.
Well, and you're also, I didn't do what you did. If I included the Woo Sox lineup, I would have probably put the lineup a little higher.
Okay, fair enough.
But I didn't do that quite yet because I don't know which of those guys is going to be in the lineup. Is it Campbell? Is Mayer going to be there? I think there's some question as to how that plays out, who gets traded away, who wins jobs out of spring training. Yeah, my top of the list is, he's a manager with a World Series ring. I think he gets the most out of his teams more often than he gets the least out of them. Your argument about the end of the year is fair. He acknowledged that with us. He acknowledges that concern. But I tend to believe some of that is about poorly built baseball teams that don't have high-end talent, that don't have the horses to ride into August and September. And when you're piecing it together with duct tape and WD-40 all year long, which I think he has to do more years than he doesn't, I think that's a really hard job to do. I think if you give Alex Cora talent, the talent that some of these other managers have that we may be watching tonight at 8:08,
mm-hmm.
I think Alex Cora is a World Series caliber manager. He's got the ring. He has a little bit of a track record. I know there's some skeletons in the closet as well, and whatever that may be. But Alex Cora, I go with, if they all do their job as well as he does his job, this team will be in World Series contention.
All right, there you go. Those are our pillar power rankings. We're way over, so we're going to take a break. When we come back, we will reset on the Bruins and what a dreadful start they're off to. We'll get to that with your phone calls right after this.
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.